the paper.
Chicken noodles.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, January 10th, 2020. I'm Ray, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Burton. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are the headlines from the front page of the Globe Gazette. Lawmakers are considering expanded marijuana program. We've had a lot of traffic. And Representative King to hold town hall. Today's weather. Mostly cloudy today. Expect less than 2 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity of 75% and poor drying conditions. Breezy in the evening, otherwise. Clouds breaking tonight. Average relative humidity will be 75%. Partly sunny tomorrow. Expect 48 hours of sunshine with average relative humidities of 60%. Today, we're going to start out about 21. Tonight's going to be down to 5. Now, here with the first story, here's Burton.
Lawmakers are considering expanded marijuana program. Stronger medical cannabis legislation is to be looked into. Lawmakers this session are almost certain to propose ideas for expanding Iowa's medical marijuana program. But with tension from last year's vetoed measures still echoing, efforts may be more tempered this time. Based on recommendations from the board appointed by the governor to advise on possible changes to the medical marijuana program, lawmakers heading back to Des Moines next week may consider legislation for stronger products. Similar policies were under consideration during the 2019 legislative session, and almost all made it into law. Last year, lawmakers passed a bill that allowed for medical marijuana products to be produced with a higher amount of THC, the psychoactive component of cannabis, which advocates said was needed to make the product strong enough to help some patients. The move, however, was at odds with recommendations from the Iowa Medical Cannabis Advisory Board. As a result, a physician who served on the board resigned in protest, and Governor Kim Reynolds vetoed the bill. The proposal passed by legislators in the 2019 session would have replaced a 3% THC cap with a 25-gram purchasing limit of THC over 90 days. But the board previously voted unanimously to maintain the state's current cap on THC in products to 3%. Des Moines neurologist Wendy Zada quit the board the day after the bill passed the Iowa House, writing in her resignation letter that legislators misstated what the board has recommended in pushing their THC dose. Reynolds vetoed the bill, saying she preferred to follow the recommendation of the Iowa Cannabidiol Advisory Board. But the Republican governor said she supported other portions of the bill. I agree with every other component of that bill. They were all recommendations of the Cannabidiol Board. I thought they were great recommendations, and I said that I agreed with every one of those. It was just the level from the 3% cap up to 25 grams over 90 days, she said. If enacted, the law would have required a pharmacist or pharmacy technician be employed at the 5 state licensed dispensaries. It would have allowed physician assistants and nurse practitioners to the list of qualified providers who can recommend patients for the program. The Cannabidiol Board's latest report to the legislators includes the possibility of replacing the 3% THC cap with a limit of 4.5 grams of THC over 90 days. We do not believe there's any justification for 25 grams, Dr. Stephen Richards, a Spirit Lake pharmacist and physician, told the Gazette earlier this month. Under the board's recommendations, the purchase limit would not apply to the terminally ill. The limit also would be increased by the certifying health provider without board approval. Richards' main concern is the potential harm these products could cause. Richard said he's found little research that illustrates the health benefits of a higher concentration of THC, but added that board members have come to understand the products won't cause harm with 4.5 grams of THC. First, do no harm, Richard said. That's the oath I took in pharmacy school and in the medical school. But some say such a move would be detrimental to some patients in Iowa's cannabidiol program. 25 grams of THC over a 90-day period would cap the maximum per day dose of THC to about 50 milligrams. Some chronic pain patients need as many as 200 milligrams per day to manage their symptoms. Lucas Nelson, general manager of medical marijuana manufacturing company MedFarm, previously told the Gazette this. That's why Representative Todd Pritchard, leader of the House Democrats from Charles City, suggested legislators send the same bill to Reynolds again, even knowing she would veto it a second time. I would like to see the bill that passed the House go back. I think it was a good bill. It got the THC levels for what we were told and what we understand, where they need to be, where they can do good for people who are suffering from certain ailments. In my mind, we sent a good bill down, Pritchard said. I think the governor's veto was a mistake. Republican leaders who control both chambers of the Iowa legislature said they expect to work with the governor this year to pass a bill she's willing to support. Obviously, I supported the bill that we passed last year. I voted in favor of it. I've been a strong supporter of medical cannabis since I came into the legislature, said Senator Charles Snyder, the Republican Senate president from West Des Moines. And I'd like to find a way to send something to the governor that she would be willing to sign and something over to the House that they would be willing to pass as well. So it's a matter of us working together and finding a way to get something done for Iowans that makes dosing more practical for patients and for the producers, something that potentially expands conditions, if that's something we can find agreement on, and something that just works better for Iowans. Minnesota and Illinois have grown their medical marijuana programs in recent years, but neither have caps on THC. Under Illinois law, qualifying patients can purchase up to 2.5 ounces, or about 70.9 grams of medical cannabis every 2 weeks. A Minnesota patient's dosage, which is determined through a consultation with a licensed pharmacist, is not affected by any product or time period limitations. Ray?
We've had a lot of traffic. Longtime Mason City ski and cycle business relocates downtown. And this is brought to us by Ashley Stewart of the Globe Gazette and comes to us from Mason City. Wayne Ski and Cycle has returned to downtown Mason City. The business opened at 15 6th Street Southwest last week after occupying a storefront on the west side for more than 20 years. The reaction has been really good, said Chad Colby, an employee of Wayne Ski and Cycle. We've had a lot of traffic. Wayne Ski and Cycle, formerly owned by Wayne Blainsdale, was located downtown from 1983 to 1998. The business opened as a Tyrol Ski and Sports Branch store in Regency Square Mall in 1976. In 1983, Blairsdahl purchased the business, moved it to the Federal Plaza, and added bicycles to his inventory. He remained downtown until 1998. Wayne Ski and Cycle was the first retail business to open on 4th Street Southwest in November 1998. Others, like Cinema West and Decker Sporting Goods, follow. In 2004, Blairsdale sold the business to the store manager, Matt Curtis. Curtis purchased the 23,064-square-foot building on 6th Street Southwest, also known as Highway 122, in March of 2018, according to city property records. Work at Wayne Ski and Cycle new location began in April. This was a complete gut job, like the existing four walls and most of the concrete is original, and everything else got demolished, Colby said. It's about as new as we can get. The business closed its 4th Street Southwest location on December 24th and opened the downtown on January 2nd. The move is attributed to a lot of factors, Colby said, mentioning among them visibility, convenience, efficiency, and community engagement. The business combines the staff and inventory from the business' former retail space and ski warehouse into one location. It also provides a dedicated space for staff to work on bicycles, winter gear, and fitness equipment. The location of the reconstructed highway, the location on the reconstructed highway with bicycle lanes is pretty prime, he said, because of Wayne's contribution, continued interest in providing the community bicycle rides in partnership with local businesses in the future. Wayne's Ski and Cycle offer winter sports gear, bicycles, fitness equipment, North Face, Patagonian, and cool clothing and accessories, as well as services like bicycle repair, bicycle fitting, and winter sports gear retail. Wayne's Ski and Cycle employs nearly 10 full-time and part-time staff and features a friendly welcome dog named Charlie. Colby said Wayne's Ski and Cycle is looking forward to serving customers, new and returning, at its new downtown location. We're really excited, he said. Wayne's Ski and Cycle is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Burton?
Representative King to hold town hall. Lawmaker plans January 22nd event in Clear Lake. U.S. Representative Steve King, Republican from Huron, is still without any House committee assignments for 2020, but that's not stopping the nine-term congressman from holding town halls in his latest election year. On January 22nd, King, who has represented Iowa's 4th congressional district since 2013 and the 5th district before that, will speak to constituents at 2 p.m. at the Lakeview Community Center in Clear Lake. In 2019, King drew coverage for his commitment to holding a town hall in all 39 of his district counties over the course of the year. But many of those were often overshadowed by King's own comments about white supremacy, a second civil war, rape and incest, and conditions at migrant detention centers. Throughout those various controversies, King would say he was taken out of context, or allege that he never said what he said, or that what he was going through was akin to what Christ went through. As the year drew to a close, King showed signs of being open to a debate with the four challengers in his primary, State Senator Randy Feenstra of Hall, Woodbury County Supervisor Jeremiah Taylor, former Irwin Mayor Brett Richards, and Arnold's Park real estate agent Steve Reeder, but maintained that he wouldn't do so until 6 weeks prior to the election on June 2nd. If King survives the most crowded primary field he's had since an open seat race in 2002, he would most certainly have had a rematch against J.D. Scholten, who he defeated in 2018 by just 3.3%, his narrowest margin of victory in any race in his campaign. Scholten is focused on defeating King and working to fix health care and the economy. The event is open to the public, and no RSVPs are required. Ray?
Northwood woman's cancer fraud case heads to court. This is brought to us by Grace Sapansky and comes to us from Northwood. A Northwood woman accused of fraudulently claiming cancer and receiving gifts and money because of it will have her arraignment hearing at 9 a.m. February 3rd at the Worth County Courthouse. Jennifer Meixel, 43, is charged with ongoing criminal conduct, fraudulent practices, second-degree theft, and four counts of forgery, all felonies. Meixel claimed she had cancer and was having surgeries and treatments done at Mayo Clinic Health System in Rochester, according to the criminal complaint. When a search warrant was served at Mayo Health System's Medical Records Department, law enforcement learned she was never diagnosed nor treated for cancer, according to court documents. Meixel had given her employer doctor's notes from three different doctors, one of whom was not employed by the hospital, she stated on the note, that all had held forged signatures, according to the complaint. She had also created an email account through which she portrayed herself as a doctor sending the emails. When asked why she had lied about having cancer, Meixel said it was because of stuff from the past, but did not want to explain what happened in the past, saying nobody knows and nobody needs to know about her past. After an interview, law enforcement held with Meixel. Meixel fraudulently received a bedroom makeover from My Happy Haven, a meal train in which volunteers make and deliver meals, and money and gifts from her church in Albert Lea, Crossroads Church, according to court documents. Meixel also has a history of criminal conduct beyond Iowa. In Florida, Meixel was accused of felony criminal use of personal identification information and forgery and misdemeanor theft in 2003. In that case, Meixel took a nolo contendere plea on the first two charges, which means she neither accepts nor denies responsibility for them, but accepts the punishment. No information was listed in the court records on the forgery charge. She received 10 years of probation, a $503 fine in total, and had to pay $1,557.89 in restitution. More recently, in February 2015 in Mitchell County, Meixel was accused of writing checks from a Girl Scout account for her personal use, paying for groceries and a new snowblower. Court records indicate that she wrote seven checks equaling $1,441.60 for personal use from the Girl Scout checking account between January 23, 2015 and February 3, 2015, according to the criminal complaint. She was charged with ongoing criminal conduct and second-degree theft, but in a plea deal, the ongoing criminal conduct charge was dropped and the theft charge was lowered to third-degree theft. She received 10 days in jail and a fine of $625. Burton?
Saragordo County man wins $10,000 lottery prize. Stephen Langer claims big prize in the 100,000 mega crossword. This is from Melanie Mergen in Clive, Iowa. A Saragordo County man has won a $10,000 lottery prize. Steve Langer of Rockwell purchased his Iowa Lottery $100,000 mega crossword scratch game at Jonesy's Stop and Shop, located at 104 First Street North in Rockwell. He claimed his prize Monday at the lottery's regional office in Mason City. Leininger's claim was the fifth of 50 prizes of $10,000 in the game. The $100,000 mega crossword is a $10 scratch game that features overall odds of 1 in 3.29 and 25 top prizes of $100,000. For more information about this game and the number of prizes still available, visit iowalottery.com. Ray?
New Ronald McDonald House opens in Des Moines, and this is brought to us by Melanie Mergen of the Globe Gazette and comes to us from Des Moines. A new Ronald McDonald House at Mercy One Children's Hospital in Des Moines is now open to families. The new Ronald McDonald House is the second to serve central Iowa and the 10th in the nation to have a location within a hospital. Located on the hospital's fourth floor, it includes 14-bedroom suites up to five people, a full-size kitchen and dining room, laundry room, playroom, location room, and respite room. Families with children 21 and younger who are receiving treatment at Mercy One can stay at the Ronald McDonald House after being referred by a medical provider or social worker. Ronald McDonald House's mission is to enrich quality of life for children and their families, said Ronald McDonald House Central Iowa Executive Director Brenda Miller. We keep families close by providing a home away from home for families traveling to Des Moines to seek critical medical care for their child that is not available in their home communities. Expanding our services wouldn't have been possible without the support of our lead donors. AbbV, the Lutheran Family and Independent Order of Odd Fellows, the Luridian Family of Independent Order of Odd Fellows, Iowa Prairie Meadows, Mercy One Des Moines Auxiliary, and Polk County Board of Supervisors, as well as many other individuals and organizations who will help sustain our mission. We are thrilled to become the 10th medical center in the United States to offer patient and family in-hospital Ronald McDonald House, said Carl Keeler, President, Mercy One Central Iowa. Mercy One's Children's Hospital has a lasting legacy of providing high-quality care for thousands of young patients across Iowa. And now we will help those patients even more as their families are able to remain close to them while they heal under the care of our skilled providers. Bert.
2019 was a wet one, special to the Globe Gazette. State officials who track weather trends say Iowa received about 6 more inches of rain than usual in 2019. With 41.5 inches of rain falling across Iowa, last year ranks as the 12th wettest year on record in the state, according to the latest water summary update. 2019 was a very wet year, but so was 2018. The last 2 years combined were the wettest 2 years on record for the state, said Tim Hall, coordinator of hydrology resources for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. These conditions have resulted in higher than normal stream flows and good shallow groundwater conditions going into the winter months. As a result of the prolonged period of higher than normal precipitation, both in Iowa and throughout the upper Midwest, Hall said river and stream flows in Iowa were above normal for the entire year. Significant and long-term flooding has been experienced on both the Mississippi and Missouri rivers in 2019, he noted, and interior streams have experienced above-normal flows for much of the year. 8 months of 2019 had below-average temperatures, Hall added, with the coldest temperatures of the year reported near sunrise on January 30th, ranging from the minus 20s in southern Iowa to minus 30s in northern Iowa. For review of Iowa's water resource trends, go to www.iowadnr.gov/water summary update. Ray?
Month before caucuses, Democrats weighing choices. And this is brought to us by James Q. Lynch as a special to the Globe Gazette and comes to us from Anamosa. Lauren Standish, a fully committed to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. I'm with all of his ideas, Standish said after hearing the 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful speak for more than an hour at an Anamosa town hall Friday. This is the future I want to see. Standish and fellow University of Wisconsin-Platteville student Jacob Nachtigall supported Sanders in 2016 and will vote for him in Wisconsin's primary on Super Tuesday, a month after Iowa's first in the nation caucuses on February 3rd. He's for the working class, Nachtigall said, adding he believes Sanders' Medicare for All plan will benefit everyone from millennials to seniors. 31 days out from the caucuses, not everyone was as certain. Across the room at the National Motorcycle Museum, where Joe Biden campaigned the day before, Gwen Sheridan said she narrowed her choices to Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. She likes Sanders' proposal for education funding, but thinks Warren is stronger on support for child care that would make it easier for parents to be in the workforce. Sheridan felt better about Sanders after working-class families cannot find decent, quality, affordable child care. We're going to end that, Sanders said. I believe you believe in universal, high-quality, affordable child care for every family. Sheridan wasn't completely satisfied with his explanation why the income tax for his health care plan would be a 4% for everyone, regardless of income. She would prefer a progressive tax that would increase as income rises. In the end, Sheridan said, I'm not committed, but I'm more enthusiastic about Sanders. Attending the town hall didn't seem to make the decision easier for Krista Grieve. I'm searching, the Cedar Rapids garbage truck driver said. With $35,000 in student loans, it's a struggle to pay her bills, so the proposal by Sanders and Warren to reduce college debt resonates with her. I'm not someone who follows a political party. I'm just looking for someone with a good heart, she said, as she played with her 22-month-old daughter, Eliza. The undecideds are not alone, said Buzz Pounds, a Hopkinton of Hopkinton. The Delaware County Democrat Party chairman doesn't plan to make a commitment until caucus night. However, he said, I'm a Medicare for all guy, so that kind of narrows the window. He thinks Democrats are narrowing their field of choices in the final month of the campaign. A lot of them are getting a lot of closer, Pound said. He's noticed they don't necessarily go to see every candidate every time they are in the area. They're still trying to get to as many as they can, but they're less interested in driving to Dubuque or Cedar Rapids, he said. Chuck and Fran Marcicek didn't mind driving 3.5 hours from Wheaton, Illinois, to Fran's hometown of Anamosa to see Sanders. They backed him in 2016 and are excited for his candidacy again this year. It's his conviction, Fran said, and spine, Chuck added. They like what he wants to make it easier, not harder, for workers to unionize, and that he supports women's rights. Sanders, who campaigned in the Milwaukee settlement near Tama on Thursday, continued his Not Me, Us bus tour Friday with stops in Waterloo and Decorah. He'll be in the Dubuque and Grundy County on Saturday. Burton?
Governor Reynolds pledges Medicaid payment accountability. This is a special to the Globe Gazette by Rod Bosshart. Des Moines. Governor Kim Reynolds said Tuesday it should not have been a surprise when the state notified a private company that manages Iowa's medical program that nearly $44 million in funding is being withheld until the managed care organization complies with contract obligations. I think it made very clear last year when we were going through the process that if providers aren't paid on time, that our managed care providers are going to be held accountable, Reynolds told an Associated Press legislative forum at the State House. The governor was asked about a situation last week in which the Iowa Department of Human Services notified Iowa Total Care, which administers health coverage to thousands of Iowans under the state's managed care program, that the state would withhold nearly $44 million in funding due to issues related to incorrect payments to medical providers and the insurance company's record-keeping. Reynolds said Iowa Total Care was put on notice by DHS Iowa Medicaid Enterprise. It was not in compliance with contract terms, was provided recommendations to address the situation, and was given a timeline to correct the situation. They didn't get it done, the governor said. So if providers aren't paid in a timely manner, they're going to be held accountable, just like we implemented in the contract negotiations. It shouldn't be a surprise. It was part of the contract negotiations. We're all partners in delivering service to Iowans, and they need to hold up their part of the bargain. Iowa Total Care, a subsidiary of St. Louis-based Centene, brought on this past July to manage Iowa's Medicaid program, has a total capitation set monthly for the services they provide of more than $169 million. The $44 million penalty represents about 26% of Iowa TotalCare's monthly payment from DHS. DHS officials announced the penalty Friday, stating the department was exercising its authority to hold the managed care organization accountable, marking the first time the state agency has issued a withhold on a capitation payment to any managed care organization. State officials said the withheld amount would be released once identified issues have been resolved. They signed a contract. They're going to be held accountable. That's what contracts are for, she added. Nearly 650,000 Iowans are enrolled in Iowa's Medicaid program, which is managed by two private insurance companies, Iowa TotalCare and Amerigroup Iowa. According to state data, more than 239,000 adult Iowans were enrolled through the Iowa TotalCare in December 2019. That does not include the nearly 20,000 Hawk-I recipients enrolled with the managed care organization. The $44 million penalty was calculated by Iowa Medicare Enterprises based on the number of unpaid claims directly related to outstanding issues over a five-month period. According to a letter sent to Iowa TotalCare, there are about 106,000 unpaid claims directly related to the outstanding issues. Release of capitation payment, which will be determined at the end of February, will be based on whether the company resolves at least 75% of the unpaid claims, according to DH officials. Reynolds said he had planned to speak with legislators once they return to the State House for their 2020 session next week about proposed changes to put more teeth into state oversight provisions and address non-payment of funds. But she declined to elaborate on what ideas would be discussed. Leaders from both political parties in the House and Senate said they would be open to such discussions. Ray?
And it's time now to move to the remembrances. Today we remember Jerry F. Krause of Clear Lake, James A. Jim Anderson of Crystal Lake, Elaine S. Cole Campney of Forest City, Jacqueline K. Appelhans of Forest City, David Allen Adams of Clear Lake, and Martha Reed Murphy, Manly. Jerry F. Krause, 85, of Clear Lake, died Thursday, January 9, 2020, at the Oakwood Care Center in Clear Lake. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, January 11, 2020, at Clear Lake United Methodist Church, 508 2nd Avenue North, with the Reverend David Peterson officiating. Jerry's family will greet relatives and friends from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Saturday at the church. In lieu of flowers and customary remembrances, memorials may be given to Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Jerry's name. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapels, Clear Lake, are in charge of arrangements. Burton?
James A. Jim Anderson, Crystal Lake. James A. Jim Anderson, 77, of Crystal Lake, died Tuesday, January 7, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 11, 2020, at Crystal Lake United Methodist Church, 215 Summit Avenue, Crystal Lake. Jim's family will greet relatives and friends 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Memorial Park Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Cremation Center, Highway 122 of West Mason City, are doing the arrangements.
Elaine S. Cole Campney, 92, of Forest City, died Sunday, January 5th, 2020, at the Good Samaritan Center in Forest City, Iowa, surrounded by her family. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, January 13th, 2020, at the Forest City United Methodist Church with Pastor Les Green officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church on Monday. Burial will be held in Roland, Iowa. Arrangements are with Cataldo Schott Funeral Home of Forest City. Online condolences for the family may be left at the cataldo.com website.
Jacqueline K. Appelhans, 77, of Forest City, Iowa, passed away unexpectedly at her home and was welcomed by the Lord on Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 10th, 2020, at the Forest City United Methodist Church, with Pastor Les Green officiating. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, January 9th, 2020, at the Cataldo Schott Funeral Home, 505 North Clark Street, Forest City, Iowa. Burial will be held in the Crystal Lake Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Jackie Appelhans Memorial Fund in care of the family. Arrangements are with the Cataldo Schott Funeral Home in Forest City. Online condolences for the family may be left at the cataldoschott.com website.
David Allen Adams, 56, of Clear Lake, died Wednesday, January 8, 2020, at home, surrounded by his family. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 13, 2020, at Zion Lutheran Church, 112 North 4th Street, Clear Lake, with Reverend Dr. Pat Hall officiating. Burial will be at Clear Lake Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, January 12, 2020, at Ward Van Slyke Colonial. Excuse me. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, January 12, 2020, at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 110 North 4th Street, Clear Lake. David was born June 21, 1963, the son of Charles Lee and Joanne Allen Feinhold Adams in Cedar Falls. He married Shelley Ann Prawley on August 3, 1990, in Hampton, Iowa, and to that union, three sons were born. A graduate of Cedar Falls High School, Dave earned a degree from the University of Northern Iowa and later from Wayne State College in Nebraska with a degree in elementary education. He taught and coached in Rockwell for 4 years before becoming an insurance agent with the Farm Bureau in Clear Lake. David was a member of Zion Lutheran Church in Clear Lake. He was also very active with youth athletic leagues and the Clear Lake Booster Club. He enjoyed golfing and was an avid fan of baseball. He liked following the St. Louis Cardinals and UNI Panthers. Most of all, he loved watching his sons play sport and spending time with his family. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street, Clear Lake, in charge of arrangements.
Martha Reed Murphy, from April 1st, 1917, to January 7, 2020. Martha Reed Murphy, 102 years old, of Northwood and formerly of Manly, passed away Tuesday, January 7th, 2020, at the Lutheran Retirement Home in Northwood. A funeral service in her honor will be held 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 11th, 2020, at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, 428 West Walnut Street, Manly, Iowa, with Reverend Linda Johnson Pressholt officiating. Burial will be in Manly Cemetery beside her loving husband of 71 years, Thomas. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral at the church. Martha Sedgwick Reed was born April 1st, 1917, in Waterloo, Iowa, the daughter of Andrew G. and Helen A. Sedgwick Reed. Matthew was baptized at the First Congregational Church in Waterloo, graduated from the West Waterloo High School in 1935. Martha continued her education at Grinnell, obtaining a Bachelor of Science degree in 1939. She married Thomas V. Murphy on March 23, 1940, in Waterloo. The couple was blessed with three children, David Thomas, Nancy Helen, and James Charles. In 2012, after 71 years of marriage, Thomas had passed away. Martha was a dedicated, active member of Bethlehem Lutheran Church. She was a third-generation PEO member and had served for 71 years. Martha's leadership role in Girl Scouting earned her a thanks badge for 50 years of service. Martha is survived by her children, Nancy Murphy of Georgia and Jim K. Murphy of Forest City, Iowa, daughter-in-law Suzanne Murphy, grandchildren Julie Alex Tishuk, Joseph Melissa Murphy, Xylina, Michael Perlman Walker, Aaron Walker, Laura Lloyd Quisenberry, and Anna John Bissell. 10 great-grandchildren, sister-in-law Mary Reed, nieces Catherine and Karen, and nephew Randy. She was predeceased by her husband Thomas, her son David Murphy, a son-in-law Donald Walker, her parents Andrew and Helen, siblings Wallace Reed, Joseph Reed, and Mary Paul, and an infant brother, David Reed. The Bride Colonial Chapel of Manly is doing the arrangements.
And we'll move back to the Iowa page. Development site in Charles City obtained certified status, and this is a special to the Globe Gazette. Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg joined Iowa Economic Development Authority and Iowa Finance Authority Director Debbie Durham and officials from Charles City to announce the latest industrial property to achieve Iowa Certified Site Program certification. The Avenue of the Saints Development Park is the 29th in the state to receive this project-ready designation. The Charles City site is south of the city and is immediately adjacent to U.S. Highway 218 Avenue of the Saints interchange for easy transportation access. The 75-acre property is zoned as a general manufacturing district and would be ideal for mid and heavy industry user. State certification has enabled Iowa to better compete for projects, state officials said, with development-ready sites certified, with attracting more than $850 million in capital investment to date. The Iowa Certification Site Program was launched in 2012 to address the lack of project-ready industrial sites in the state. It is an independent third-party certification program that uses the nationally recognized site selection firm Quest Site Solutions as the certifying agent. In addition to the 29 sites certified, state officials said two additional sites were working through various phases of the program. Burton?
State marks 11 years of Smoke-Free Air Act, a special to the Globe Gazette. Officials with the State Department of Public Health marked the 11th year of Iowa's Smoke-Free Air Act on Tuesday by noting the law has generated more than 6,000 complaints since it was enacted in 2008. Health officials said the 6,400 complaints about smoking in prohibited places ranked as following: bars, 1,670, restaurants, 1,370, retail stores and service, 1,102, government, 441, and educational facilities, 242. The department says any Iowan may report a violation of the Smoke-Free Air Act anonymously by calling 888-944-2247 or online at smokefreeair.iowa.gov. Business owners also may visit the website to find free resources such as signage. Businesses may need new signage that features the updated web address, smokefreeair.iowa.gov. Iowans seeking smoke-free rental properties may visit smokefreehomes.iowa.gov, where more than 18,000 smoke-free rental units are listed. According to the most recent Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System survey, smoking has declined among Iowa adults from 23.2% in 2000 to 17.1% in 2017. However, an estimated 400,000 Iowans still smoke cigarettes. Free help to quit tobacco is available at quitlineiowa.org or by calling 800-QUIT, Q-U-I-T, dash N-O-W now. Right?
New Iowa Arts Cultural Grants, and this is a special to the Globe Gazette. Officials with the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs announced Tuesday that a new round of arts cultural grants and designation opportunities are open for 2020 and 2021 fiscal year. Department Director Chris Kramer said application deadlines begin March 1st and run through June 1st for grants, fellowships, and other opportunities relating to history, historical preservation, arts, film media, and community development programs. The department is investing more than $3 million during the current fiscal year to strengthen quality of life and build cultural vibrancy in communities across the state, she said. These investments help preserve history and historical properties and offer world-class arts and cultural experiences that attract and retain a globally minded workforce, improve mental and emotional well-being, and build culturally vibrant communities, Kramer said. And we'll move to the sports page now, Burton.
New players make big splash for West Fork. The Warhawks have started the season with a perfect 9-0 mark. Shane Lance has written this for the Globe Gazette. It's not often that a team loses its best player and somehow gets better, but the West Fork boys basketball team has done just that. A year ago, the Warhawks went 18-5, largely behind the offensive contributions of All-State senior Zach Martinek. After the 2018-2019 season ended, West Fork lost Martinek and six other seniors to graduation. They seem to be doing just fine as the Warhawks went into Thursday night's game against Dyke New Hartford with a perfect 9-0 record. Two starters returned from last season, along with senior Brett Weaver. The rest of the starting lineup and the bench is new, called up from the JV squad to try to fill in for those losses. We moved up a pretty talented JV team up to varsity, and they've really blended in well with the holdovers from last year's varsity team, head coach Frank Schnoes said. It's a surprise that we're 9-0 because we played a pretty tough postseason schedule, but it's not a surprise that the kids have gelled pretty well together. The Warhawks are led on offense by a trio of players. Senior Caden Ames leads the team with 13.7 points per game, with junior Jacob Washington and Braden Vold close behind with 12.9 and 12 points, respectively. Washington has made the biggest splash so far. A year ago, he was a JV player, and this season, he is the team's second-leading scorer and leading rebounder with 72 on the season. He really gives us an added dimension with some size inside, Schnoes said. Just because he is such a good rebounder, both offensive and defensive, and he just has overall speed and plays good defense. He can guard any one of the five positions in any given game. Washington's first varsity game came in the Warhawks' surprising opening win against Clear Lake, a team that made it to the state tournament with a 24-0 record a season ago. In that game, Washington announced his arrival with a bang, scoring 21 points and collecting 14 total rebounds. It was extremely huge for us, and I think it has carried throughout the whole season, Washington said of that first win. We played extremely well those games. We play as a team, and we all are there for each other and hyping each other up. Washington has 72 rebounds on the season so far among the top five for area players. He's listed at 6'2" tall, but Schnoes insists that he plays like a much taller player. For Washington, crashing the boards and rebounding is what he loves to do the most. It's my favorite thing to do, Washington said. I love rebounding, and I think it creates a lot of opportunities. That's how I got the majority of my points, from rebounding. My dad has always been pretty good on that. Playing AAU, they're always preaching rebounding and crashing the boards. I noticed that I could get it if I really tried. It's been pretty huge for me. With so many new players, both Schnoes and his returning players were unsure of how the team would look going into the season. They knew that replacing Martinek, who averaged 19.5 games points a season ago, would be tough. But with the leadership of the returning seniors and the breakout play of players like Washington, things have gone surprisingly well. We've played as a team, and we've shared the ball well and spread out the scoring, Ames said. Everyone has contributed. Instead of just a couple players, it's been a whole team effort. At this point in the season, their eyes are still set on winning the conference. According to Schnoes, the team isn't looking ahead too far and is just focused on its next game. His players, however, allow that a possible trip to Wells Fargo Arena is in the back of their mind. That's always the goal, Ames said. We sit down and make season goals before the season starts, and that's always on the list. Even if other people don't think we can do it, we always believe that we can do it. The Warhawks played Dyke New Hartford on Thursday night. Results were not available at press time. Ray?
Hawkeye's quarterback situation evolving. Mansell leaving. Petras steps up. And this is brought to us by Steve Patterson as a special to the Globe Gazette. I will begin spring football practices in March with two scholarship quarterbacks on campus. Peyton Mansell, who dropped into the third spot on the Hawkeye depth chart last fall, plans to transfer to another program this month after not seeing any action in a reserve role for Iowa during its recently completed 10-3 season. Mansell's decisions came as Iowa works to replace three-year starter Nate Stanley at quarterback this spring. Sophomore Spencer Petras, a 6'5 pro-style quarterback who mirrors Stanley's skill set in many respects, moved past Mansell into the second slot on the depth chart before Iowa's season opener last fall, was the only quarterback other than Stanley to throw a pass in a game for Iowa last season. The only other scholarship quarterback in the program who returns is 6'1 redshirt freshman, Alex Padella. Iowa's roster also includes a walk-on quarterback, 6'5" sophomore Connor Kapusik. The Hawkeyes will add an additional scholarship quarterback in June when true freshman Deuce Hogan of Grapevine, Texas, joins the program. Both Petras and Padilla enrolled at mid-year and will be participating in spring practices for the third and second years, respectively. Mansell declined to discuss the programs he is considering. The Belton, Texas quarterback saw action in five games as a redshirt freshman in 2018, completing 5 of 8 passes for 83 yards and rushing 8 times for 31 yards and 1 touchdown. He did not take a snap in 2019. Petras has appeared in 5 games over the past 2 seasons in Iowa, including 3 games in 2019. He completed 6 of 10 passes for 25 yards and rushed once for a 1-yard touchdown last fall. Burton.
The game of the week is the Saints versus Knights. One loss, St. Ansgar takes on Newman Catholic. This is by Shane Lance. After a sudden snowstorm swept through North Iowa last week and led to the postponements and cancellations of many area basketball games, we'll try this again. Hopefully this time, this game of the week story will not immediately be deemed obsolete. This week we'll be headed to St. Ansgar for the Globe Gazette Game of the Week between St. Ansgar and Newman Catholic girls basketball teams. Number 7 St. Ansgar comes into Friday's game on a hot streak, winners of its last 8 games. The Saints have an overall record of 9-1 and an average margin of victory of nearly 20 points. 3 players are doing the heavy lifting for the Saints this year, with Haley Anderson, Gracie Urbach, and Brooklyn Hackbart, averaging 16.5, 13.2, and 12.4 points per game, respectively. Anderson has a team-high 165 points this season and also leads the team with 19 three-pointers. Hackbart has proven to be an offensive and defensive threat with 51.9 shooting percentage, 112 total rebounds, 25 blocks, and 25 steals on the season. The Saints are fresh off a dominant 52-15 win over Northwood Kensett on Tuesday night and hope to have a repeat performance against the 6-win-4-losses Knights. Through its first 10 games, Newman Catholic has been on a basketball roller coaster. In its 6 victories, the Knights have won by an average of nearly 29 points. In their losses, the Knights have lost by nearly a 37-point margin. On Friday, the Knights will have their hands full. Newman is led in offense by junior Kalen Curley, who has 139 points on the season, 81 more than the Knights' second leading scorer, Lily Castle. Curley averages 13.9 points per game, and though she takes plenty of shots, it's not a high-percentage shooter with a mark of just 36% for the year. The team's most accurate shooter is Haley Warman, who has a team-high 43.8% shooting mark. Faith Waddell is the Knights' leading rebounder with 64 boards, while Curley isn't too far behind with 49. Curley's also contributed 20 assists, 32 steals, and 6 blocks. The point is, Curley is the engine that makes Newman Catholic go. As the leading scorer, she will get the ball and take the big shots, but against a top-flight team like St. Ansgar, she might struggle. A big key for any basketball team is depth. The Saints have plenty of weapons on offense and defense, a big reason why they are ranked number 7 in the state in Class 1A. That depth should be enough to boost them over the Knights. But all that could change if Curley has a big day. Still, the Saints should get this one. Not only do they have the depth, they have confidence.
And we'll finish off with our sports with a professional football view. Vikings Titans add to NFL 6-seed lore. Both teams advance into divisional round of playoffs. There's a strength at 6. Both number 6 seeds advance to the divisional round of the playoffs for the second year in a row, marking the first time that's happened in consecutive season since the NFL instituted the current 12-team formation format in 1990. First, the Tennessee Titans, 10-7, sent the New England Patriots, 12-5, to the earliest exit in a decade. Then the Minnesota Vikings, 11-6, knocked off the New Orleans Saints, who are 12-5. Last year, the Indianapolis Colts and Philadelphia Eagles won wild card games at number 6 seeds. Both teams lost in the divisional round. Since 2013, number 6 seeds are 10-4 in the wild card round, but those teams are 0-12 in the following week. The last time a number 6 seed reached the conference championship was the 2010 season when New York Jets and Green Bay Packers did it. The Packers went on to win the Super Bowl. The Vikings and Titans aim to upset number 1 seeds on Saturday. Minnesota visits San Francisco 49ers 13-3 in the early game, and Tennessee faces the Baltimore Ravens 14-2 in the nightcap. The 2005 Steelers are the only other 6 seed to win a Super Bowl. The 2008 Ravens and 2008 Eagles also reached conference title games as number 6 seeds. Burton?
That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, January 10th, 2020. Your readers have been Burton and Ray. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You're listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.